Hey everyone, Alan here, creator and host of Script to Screen. I've always been a fan of podcasts, and when I was still in college, I always wanted to host one, but it wasn't that simple back then. Nowadays, the options are endless, but there's only one that can help you and your podcast reach listeners and grow with your vision. Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it is 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you can get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's exactly what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. Anchor has been Script to Screen's home since I first started the podcast, and I couldn't be happier. Not only is it simple for uploading episodes, but fans can also reach out to us by sending voice messages and be featured on the show. So if you've always wanted to start a podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start. Again, that's anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. That's anchor.fm/start. Send me a link when you're done. I can't wait to hear your podcast.
And now, a brand new episode of the Script to Screen News Hour here on Radio Lebanon 96.2 FM with hosts Alan Mahana and Hod Solo. Welcome to a brand new episode of Script to Screen here on Radio Lebanon 96.2 FM. This is Script to Screen News Hour on Saturday. And we come to you this week with quite somber news. We lost a huge name in pop culture earlier this week. Stan the Man Lee. The man behind some of the greatest superheroes of our time. But he was more than that. He was a great storyteller. And for Script to Screen, which is a show that is all about, in one way or another, storytelling, this is what we are going to be dedicating the entire episode, today's episode, to talk about, to honor Stan Lee. So I cannot do that alone. Actually, I can't do that alone on many levels, because it's not just the solo to my Chewbacca here joining us. It is also someone who is way more literate maybe than both Hod and I when it comes to comic books and Stan Lee and Marvel and all that stuff. Our good friend Anthony Sargon as well is here. So hello to you both.
Hello, hello.
Howdy.
Howdy.
I've been playing a lot of Red Dead Redemption, so that's the only appropriate response.
I think a lot of people have been playing a lot of Red Dead Redemption over the past couple of weeks. Weeks?
Has it weeks. Been? Weeks. Yeah, 20. Weeks. Like about 20 days. I'm losing track of real time. But
So today's episode will largely focus on Stan Lee, his work, Marvel, all that good stuff. But before that, we do have to do a movie of the week this week, and we do have to cover that. So we will be covering the sequel in the prequel. We're going to be doing that a lot, I think, as time goes on. We're going to be talking about sequels to prequels and prequels to sequels and all that good stuff as timelines merge and franchises continue to grow. But we will be talking about Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. It is the movie of the week, so let's not waste too much time. Let's go ahead and just dive right in so that we can move on to the honoring of Stan Lee.
The time's coming when you're gonna have to pick a side.
No, I don't do sides.
What are you gonna do?
I think it's something.
Mute. You never met a monster you couldn't love.
Let's take him.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, so Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald.
Is it Grindelwald or Grindelwald?
Well, okay, so if you want to pronounce it properly, it would most likely be Grindelwald.
Yeah.
But all the Americans in the film say Grindelwald, yeah. So I think...
Because Jude Law at one point says Grindelwald.
Grindelwald. So this is... This is going to be an interesting conversation, yep. Seeing as to how I'm the bigger Potterhead between us two.
I'm not a Potterhead. You're a big Potterhead.
Yeah. Which is, you know, if any of you have read my review so far, many of you can be maybe questioning my my membership to the Potterheads. But it is a very interesting thing because you and I both had very different experiences watching this movie.
Yeah. Obviously, for different reasons, because you love the franchise and I'm a casual watcher of those movies.
Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and talk about what you thought of the film first, and then I'll put in my two cents, making sure that we're not going to spoil it to anybody. Specifically, we don't want to spoil it because we have someone in the room who hasn't seen it just yet. So we don't want to do any spoilers, but we need to talk about certain things as much as we can. So it's going to be interesting to do that. So go ahead, jump right in.
Look, personally, I enjoyed the movie. I don't have a lot of problems with it. I'm not into the history of Harry Potter, so because this movie takes place before the Harry Potter franchise, so whenever there were scenes or characters or anything referenced to the future Harry Potter series, I'd never really got that, but it didn't really bother me.
Okay.
I enjoyed performances, all in all. I love Eddie Redmayne. Jude Law, I thought, was quite good. I really enjoyed Johnny Depp because in his last few movies, he's been all over the top and he was very much in restraint in this movie. Mm-hmm. And, excuse me, like Thanos in Infinity War, he kind of made me understand his reasoning and why he wants to do what he wants to do. And I appreciated that. Visually, it's a stunning movie. The effects are marvelous. Are fantastic. I had a good time. There are twists here and there. As a person who's not into it deeply, I had fun watching this movie. That's all I can really say. I mean, for someone who's not a fan, I liked it.
Okay, fair enough. My problems with it go, so my problems with the film go deeper because I am deeper into, the Potterverse or the Potter universe or whatever you want, the Wizarding World. There we go. So visually I do agree with you. Visually, the film is extremely beautiful. It's, David Yates is upping his game as a director. It doesn't look bland. There's a lot going on visually between the colors and the visual effects, the costume design in this film was astounding. Very on point when it comes to the costumes. Bless you.
Sorry.
Hud is suffering a little bit from a little cold.
Yeah, sorry guys.
But again, my problems here are narratively. I think, and I made that very clear in my review, I think J.K. Rowling is a great novelist. She is not a great screenwriter. And the language for both is very different. You can do a lot of exposition in a book, but on screen, to do a lot of exposition, it becomes very boring and long-winded. And it's going to be very hard for the audience to keep track. This concept of the movie does a lot of fan service. Fan service is going to slowly start killing films, I think, because you're going to be focusing on pleasing fans versus telling the story as it should be told. And I almost feel like the Easter eggs that she drops in there are very much those bullet point checkpoints, you know, like we need to do this, check, we need to do this, check, we need to do this, check, which again hurts the story. It is very much the transitional film. It feels like the transitional film. I almost feel like Fantastic Beasts 3 is going to be much better. And then we're going to have the same problem with 4. And then 5 is going to be the climactic, beautiful end that we all want. 2 and 4 are going to be the worst out of those 5 films because they're going to be transitional. And because J.K. Rowling is going to want to be linking things as much as she can to get to the end point that she wants to get to. There's also the issue of retconning. And this is what bothered me the most about the film is that it's
indirectly, it almost feels like J.K. Rowling doesn't even remember the history that she's established via the Harry Potter books. She's doing a lot of retconning in this book, in this movie. She's doing a lot of retconning, which is also problematic because it will cause issues when it comes to the Harry Potter movies and the Harry Potter books, because those are ripples that, again, you're messing with the timeline. And again, you know, without spoiling too much, there are certain characters that according to the history of Hogwarts and who's supposed to be there at what particular time, we're not supposed to be there, and yet they are there. You know, when it comes to certain other characters and their relations, their family trees, also that there's mix-ups in that as well.
Okay.
On a positive note, one of my favorite characters in the film, who I wish had gotten the proper storytelling that she deserved, is Queenie. Because her arc in this film caught me completely off guard, and I absolutely loved where the character ended up by the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. But she didn't get enough screen time, and I think this is the thing with all the characters. Jude Law was barely used. Johnny Depp was barely used, and I agree with you. I love this very toned down, almost introverted mm-hmm. Johnny Depp, and not very like quirky as we are used to him, a very non-Jack Sparrow-y Johnny Depp. I liked Grindelwald's character. That monologue scene at the end is just, whoa, mm-hmm. out of this world, is amazing. But again, she's trying to juggle too much with this movie. There are so many subplots, so many different characters that she's trying to get to, which cause the film to feel very choppy. And again, I don't know if you felt that, but I was like exhausted by the end of it. I was exhausted mentally. I was exhausted visually because there's a lot going on. And then narratively, it was just a migraine for me. But again, I feel like this third film that's going to come after this is going to be much better. And then 5 is going to be excellent, but 2 and 4 are going to be hugely problematic.
Probably. Again, not the biggest fan. So, but yeah, you are right about some characters being underwritten and underused.
Yeah.
That I do agree with that. But again, it's a link to a bigger chain of movies. So perhaps we have to wait and see what happens next. Perhaps.
But for us to be saying this when it comes to cinema is a problem. This is not a TV show. And this is how movies are being written today. Like, remember a while back a movie called Mile 22 came out?
Yeah.
It literally ends on a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
It's cinema, guys. It's like you need to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. I don't mind an open ending. I don't mind something left to be solved in the next one, which is what all the Harry Potters did, what some of the Marvel's movie do.
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings did that as well.
Cliffhangers can be used, like Lord of the Rings, for example, is how a cliffhanger should be done.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
the plot line for a film is done, but then you're left with a little bit exciting you for what's mm-hmm. to come afterwards. Whereas this is just like a telenovela ending. It feels like a soap opera ending. And it's very bothersome to see this in a series and a franchise that I absolutely love. Again, collectibles at home, read the books multiple times. I have all the DVDs, like, you know, and it was a very hard review for me to write and very hard for me to even say this the way I'm saying it now. But, you know, will I see the third one? Absolutely. Do I think people should go see this one? Yeah, absolutely. Go see it. You might have an experience like Had did. You might have a completely different experience than I did. Again, this is I almost feel like this film is like the Last Jedi of the Harry Potter universe, because it's really, you know, like it's starting to divide fans because some of them are like, whoa, this is amazing. And others are like, we don't understand what's happening, why the retconning, blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, that's where I stand on the film.
Fair enough. Anthony, any thoughts, anything?
I'm watching it tonight. I'm honestly, I've read all the Harry Potter books. I consider myself like a pretty decent Harry Potter fan. I was not excited about this franchise ever since it was announced. And the fact that they announced 5 movies from the get-go, it kind of gave me a headache just thinking about it. Saw the first one. I enjoyed it. I thought it was cute, but it felt like a Pokemon movie set in the Harry Potter world.
Yeah.
I don't like prequels as a general rule. I don't like going back and explaining things that don't need explaining, especially the story of the guy who wrote one of the textbooks that Harry Potter used in Hogwarts. I never found that compelling from the get. It was a cute movie, and I didn't like David Yates's, almost all his Harry Potter movies, 5, 6, 7, and 7 Part 2, I thought were the weakest of the entire franchise. I like 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Oh, that's really interesting.
I like them way more than I like. Ever since David Yates took over, I felt like he sucked the fun out of the franchise. But when I saw Fantastic Beasts 1, he actually brought back some of that magic and some of that fun.
Okay.
So that's why I enjoyed it, but ultimately it was pretty forgettable. Like I barely remember anything that happened in that movie. I never felt the urge to want to see it again. I'm kind of watching the sequel out of obligation rather than me being excited for it. And the fact that there's three more to come means nothing to me, honestly.
I did like the David Yates Harry Potter films personally, but I do get where you're saying about taking the fun out of it. But I mean, the books do get a lot darker.
Yeah, no, it made sense because the characters were getting older and the circumstances were getting darker, but I don't know, the movies were really getting less fun. I still like them. They're very solidly made, and that's just my opinion. Like, the vast majority would disagree with me. But to me, his films were my least favorite of the franchise.
So here we are, you know, at the moment that I guess we've not really dreading, but where we got to start talking and honoring the great man that is Stan Lee. What's a good way to start this? Do we talk about his legacy first, his history first? Do we give a 411 for those who don't necessarily know all that stuff about him yet?
I think a small breakdown for the listeners who aren't really familiar with Stan Lee. Yep. Shame on you if you're not
familiar. Well, I mean, hey, not a lot of, you know, we're living in a time where research and reading is very limited by a lot of people. They don't do their due diligence. Mr. Sargon, care to start us off?
Sure. I mean, to your point, nowadays, like I've noticed in many of the Marvel films that when I go watch them in the theater, every time Stan Lee shows up, I'd say about half of the audience cheers, which is pretty cool.
Mm. Yeah.
So there is a lot of awareness. And I think since he's been around for 95 years, you know, almost a freaking century, we've been lucky enough to have him for so long. And so he's been... People have had many chances to see him. Obviously, the obvious place to start is that he created some of the most popular comic book heroes of all time. He's pretty much responsible for Marvel as a company for creating their most popular characters.
Okay.
It started with the Fantastic Four in 1961. And ever since he created the Fantastic Four, he was on a roll. He got Spider-Man after that, Iron Man, Hulk, Thor, X-Men, Black Panther, Daredevil. Like, the dude was unstoppable. So,
and it's an interesting misconception, because he's not the founder of Marvel.
No, he's not.
Which is what a lot of people think he is.
Yeah, no, and Marvel used to be called Timely Comics back in the day. He joined when he was really young, just like as an assistant, and then sort of moved his way up. And then he sort of fell into this by accident. Stan was just trying to pay the bills. He wanted to be a novelist. He never wanted to be a comic book writer.
Right.
He was ashamed at being a comic book writer at first.
Exactly. He changed his name from Stanley Martin Lieber to Stan Lee because he didn't want to associate himself and his name with comic books. He's like, I'm going to save my name until I write, you know, my great novel. Right now, it's writing comics is too taboo, because back in the day, comics were looked at pretty badly by people. It was like nowadays, when say there's a mass shooting, everyone wants to blame video games.
Right.
In the 90s and the early 2000s, they were blaming rap and rock music.
Right.
Well, back in the 60s and in the 70s, they used to blame a lot of like delinquency on comic books. That used to be what they used to blame it on. You know, like your kid isn't studying in school, it's probably the comic, the comics he's reading. So there was no honor in writing comic books and stuff. So he was literally ashamed. And to see how far we've come from that time is really cool.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I saw a recent interview where he was talking about, you know, like the idea of him being ashamed of being, you know, like a comic writer or whatever. Like, it's just interesting to see how, you know, even back then, or even for someone like Stan Lee, like to feel that insecurity is like, even he, you know, even Stan the man Lee has insecurities. And in a lot of ways, it kind of makes sense, because then you look at all these characters that he created. And I think the thing that stands out the most about these Marvel characters is that even though they were superheroes, they were very much human.
Mm-hmm.
And their human elements were very, very clear. And they struggled with a lot of they had human problems. And, you know,
exactly.
It wasn't just good versus evil or like superheroes duking it out. There was a lot of other stuff going on in the, you know, in the subplots and the undercurrents of all these storylines. And I think that, you know, this is where that stems from in a lot of ways, because, you know, write what you know, put yourself in your stories and the stories that you tell. So you said that it started with the Fantastic Four. That was the first one that he
that was the first comic that he wrote the way he wanted. So basically, okay. At one point, he wanted to leave Marvel. Like, he wanted to do something else. His wife, Joan Lee, was like, Stan, I know you want to leave. How about you write a comic the way you want to write it? How about you write the characters the way that you want to write them? And then if they don't like it, what's the worst they're going to do? Fire you? You want to leave anyways. So he writes the Fantastic Four. Book sells amazingly well. So his editors basically give him carte blanche and like, do whatever you want, man. Like, we trust you. And then he just goes on a roll. And just when he was creating these characters, no one, especially him, had any idea that they would be the phenomenons that they, yeah. And like, he was just trying to pay the bills. Like, okay, what else can I come up with? All right. Hulk, this dude turns green. It's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, whatever. Here we go. Like, there was a lot of thought behind them, but also it was just a dude trying to pay the bills, but he was just very creative and his approach was the right one. And that's why they resonated and ended up being timeless. But like, no one, he never would have guessed what would happen with these characters 50, 60 years down the line.
And I think that that's the, you know, that's the beauty of the legacy that he's left behind, is that these characters have become not just pop culture icons, but like, they are characters that really, really touch and inspire a ton of people. So speaking of these characters, I'm pretty sure I know which character Anthony's going to say, but like, Had, who do you say is your favorite Marvel hero?
My favorite Marvel hero is Captain America.
Okay.
For many reasons. He's someone who's very, very loyal, very courageous, comes from a background where he was beat up. He was an everyman. He was even weaker, inferior to normal people. And then he became super strong. And I love the loyalty he has towards Bucky, the loyalty he has towards the Shield. He's such an interesting character. And when he has to go badass, he does go pretty badass. Yeah. I like that about him.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's on top of my list. I wonder who Anthony's is.
Yeah, I know.
So
I have no idea.
Yeah, no. For whoever doesn't know, it is definitely Spider-Man, and that's the character that most people will associate Stan Lee with. It's like when you think of Walt Disney, you think of Mickey Mouse automatically. When you say Stan Lee, you'll probably think Spider-Man.
Yeah.
At first, but like, he's my personal favorite just because he's the quintessential. He represents exactly what Stan was trying to do. The thing you mentioned earlier, giving extraordinary people ordinary lives and ordinary problems. Spider-Man is the textbook example of that. Like, broke 16-year-old kid, has to take care of his old aunt, can't pay the bills, can't talk to girls, struggles to get a job, and then has to balance his personal life with trying to save New York. And seeing him trying to balance these two things and sort of keep his girlfriend and also try to keep his grades up, try to pay the bills. He's fighting Green Goblin, but Aunt May needs medicine and she's in the hospital. So what does he do? Those dilemmas. And then every character he created, there was always a deeper level to it. So yeah, Daredevil is blind, so that gives him a whole other level. The X-Men, you can look at the X-Men and interpret it in so many different ways. You know, Black Panther, Stan was very ahead of his time in terms of, first of all, he hated racism, he hated bigotry. Stan, at the end of a lot of his comics, used to write what was called Stan's soapbox, where he would just literally write paragraphs for his fans in a way to interact with fans. And he had this whole thing that's against bigotry and racism. So the guy really was, I don't know how we got to this point, but like, yeah, once I start talking, I get into all these ideas, but he really was ahead of his time. And he also changed the way companies interacted with their fans, which we can get into a little bit later.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. What Anthony's saying is he always, if you want, stood up for minorities or for people that were like X-Men.
Yeah.
the X-Men, for example, you're looking at a lot of fights against homophobia, people who are different, people who have issues. And for me, Stan Lee, and I'm going to get a bit like personal here, is a very interesting person in my life because as a kid, I grew up in different countries. And coming to Cyprus from France, I was the kid who can speak English, and I found comfort in these characters. And then coming back to Lebanon, also, I was the kid who can speak Arabic in school, and I was the odd one out. And his characters kind of made me feel comfortable, made me feel that it's okay to be different. And I think that's where one of his biggest strengths it was, yeah.
And then, you know, which brings it literally at home run because, You know, I wrote in the show notes our like favorite MCU hero, but then when I started going down the list, Captain America did come up, but I wanted to go a little deeper and like, you know, who is it, you know, which of his characters really did hit home for me? And it was characters, it wasn't a character because it was the X-Men. Mm-hmm. Because I grew up watching the TV show, I read some of those comic books, I wasn't a big comic book reader back then, I read a little bit more now, but I did watch, you know, the old animated show and then X-Men Evolution came after that, which was a more updated version. I loved the films, and it is exactly, you know, that is exactly why I liked the X-Men, because growing up in high school, I was, you know, severely bullied. I was an outcast. I was an outsider, you know, an Arab kid in America, you know, in pre and post 9/11 periods was not the friendliest of places. Characters like the X-Men and what they had to deal with and being outsiders and dealing with all that, you know, that hit home. So the X-Men would probably be my favorite heroes in a way. And then jumping off to more, you know, modern times, but let's say favorite Marvel / MCU film.
Go for it.
Go for it.
Mine's also obvious. So.
Yeah.
I wonder which
his one he's already spoken about on the show, actually. Yeah.
I think I would have to say Infinity War recently.
Okay.
I love that movie so much. I've watched it, I don't know, 4 or 5 times already. I can't wait to see the next part.
Oh my God.
But
yeah.
What it did with all these characters, again, Thanos, freaking amazing villain. You relate to him. You understand what he's trying to do. Each character has like that moment in the movie. Everything about it was just magic. It took me places emotionally that I couldn't even imagine a movie would do, honestly.
Not to jump back to like Fantastic Beasts, but when you look at something like Infinity War and you see how many characters are in that movie and the fact that every single one of them was concrete and solid and their arcs were there and everything was there and everything was well balanced. And then you look at Fantastic Beasts, which basically has like 8 characters, and she couldn't even do that with 8 characters. It's mind boggling to me. Anyway, my favorite MCU film, I've mentioned this before a million times as well, would have to be Captain America Winter Soldier. I've seen that like over 25 times. I use it in my art of film class all the time when we get to editing, because that you know, that highway fight sequence is just, blah, it's so mind-blowing. And then it has my, you know, like, it's X-Men, Captain America, and then Bucky is, for me, the Bucky Captain America relationship is that loyal friendship thing is amazing to me. It's very Frodo Sam, minus the you know, like the homoeroticism, but like it's very Frodo Sam. But yeah, Captain America Winter Soldier has to be my favorite because it also, for me, it also changed the superhero genre. Like it wasn't just a superhero film. It was a conspiracy theory, you know, political thriller. Oh, and yeah, it's a Marvel movie. So yeah.
Mine is hands down Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2. Like, to me, no comic book movie has ever come close to the greatness of that movie. Even The Dark Knight, like, The Dark Knight is great, but, like, take the Joker out of that movie, it's not nearly as memorable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Spider-Man 2 is just, it's emotional. Like, sure, I love Infinity War. I saw it 4 times in theaters, but, like, Infinity War got you emotional when Spider-Man died. Like, they had to go that far to make you cry. Spider-Man 2, I was crying when Aunt May was trying to give Peter $20 for his birthday. And he was telling her no because she's broke. And she's crying and she's telling him, please take my money. Like, it had some genuine dramatic moments that just make you tear up, that destroy you. He stopped being Spider-Man for like 30 minutes. Like, what movie does that? What sequel takes your main character,
a really strips good him, sequel
strips him of his powers, and for 30 minutes he's just walking in the street eating hot dogs to raindrops keep falling on my head, and still make that an incredible film. So to me, no comic book movie has ever come close. And again, it's all thanks to Stan Lee's creation, and Sam Raimi, the director, was incredibly influenced by Stan Lee. He had a painting of Spider-Man hanging over his bed ever since he was like a 13-year-old. So you have all these great filmmakers who were inspired by Stan Lee, and they're giving us movies that are changing our lives. So it, like, I don't know where I'd be today if I wasn't exposed to Spider-Man. I don't know what my life would look like today if I wasn't in that theater on May 3rd, 2002, watching Spider-Man for the first time. I couldn't tell you where I'd be, honestly.
You definitely would not have that tattoo.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. And so, like, it's really, that's what I think people should remember Stan for the most, like the way he's changed our lives in ways that you don't even, you might not even realize until you trace your memories and go back to like, how did that affect me? How did these characters really affect me? And when I look back at my life, the influence is immense.
Yeah, I agree.
And the influence he's had on cinema as a whole, you don't have a summer where you don't have blockbuster movies, superhero movies, and not just Marvel, DC too. So the whole package.
Yeah.
Everything. And some people would argue that's a bad thing. That could be disputed. Mm-hmm. If do we have too many comic book movies and is it, but like, All the highest grossing movies at the end of the year are generally Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We kind of wanted to jump into how Stan Lee has, influenced cinema as a whole. I think the entire landscape of cinema as we know it and the box office as we know it is completely different now because of the Marvel comics, because they proved that you could do, a comic book movie with a lot of heart, with a lot of proper conflict. And I think before the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man, the only thing we had were the Batman movies.
I think you had Blade.
You had Blade and X-Men in terms of Marvel movies.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
X-Men. But yeah, it was the Burton. You had the Donner Superman and Burton's Batman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you had Blade, then you had X-Men, and then Spider-Man just was like,
yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, even when you look at the first X-Men, I mean, it's a good film, but it's nowhere near the first Spider-Man movie. Mm-hmm. Like, it's still nowhere near, like, as far as the heart and the human element and the drama that is on the screen that you're watching, mm-hmm. it's nowhere near. It doesn't hit you as hard as the first Spider-Man does.
Yeah, no, it has a lot more heart. Like, I respect Bryan Singer's first X-Men movie. I really enjoyed it back in the day. Yeah, it still holds up decently well. Not great. Like, I think X2 was
yeah,
a much
way better.
I love
way
X2.
Better. Yeah,
but
yeah.
X-Men, like, it did it right. And look, they had to. Back in the day in 2001, you had to get rid of the yellow spandex and give him black leather. You had to ease the audience into
those.
Like, right now, almost everyone knows who Thanos is. Who, that drives me insane. Like, I don't, I have a hard time comprehending. Like people who would never know who Thanos is supposed to be know who Thanos is. So yeah, they had to ease the audience into it. So Bryan Singer's X-Men did a great job at sort of slowly introducing people to these crazier concepts. This guy has knives coming out of his hands.
Yeah.
Made it acceptable.
Yeah.
But I think you're saying that they made good comic book movies. I think they actually made good movies.
Well, yeah. No, but mm-hmm. what I meant is that yeah. it kind of, but at that time, like yeah. we had like comic book films or superhero or movies based on superheroes they're not what they are today.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think
absolutely.
Sam Raimi's Spider-Man was that opening of the gate of the floodgates, yeah. you know, like that was.
But if you look at them today versus what they used to be, they're very solid. There's good character development.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It can compete with any actual film.
Absolutely.
And this is this debate I have with certain people sometimes. And you're going to go watch a comic book movie. It's a movie, guys.
Yeah.
It's no longer that.
Yeah. But, you know, and it's very interesting now that we're. And I kind of mentioned this in a conversation I had, but it's interesting, you know, it's kind of like this weird, bittersweet thing that we're getting the final, not the final, but like the final Avengers film in this phase, essentially, mm-hmm. and next year, and his, you know, Stan Lee's last cameo at the same time. And he, you know, with him passing now, it's just almost like this perfect circular kind of thing for this new generation of, which makes me worry just a little bit that like, it's almost like when Steve Jobs died, Apple tanked. I really don't want Marvel to tank. Like it scares me.
I doubt they're going to tank with Kevin Feige.
Maybe the MCU, I mean, Marvel, the movies are probably fine because of Kevin Feige. I just meant like the comics in general and all that stuff. When you lose, it's like when you lose the soul of it.
It's
It's kind of scary.
Kevin Smith said it best. If Kevin Smith had a beautiful like 2-hour podcast, it's on YouTube if you want to find it, talking about Stan Lee. It's really cool. But he said it's very weird waking up in a Stan Lee-less world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he's been with us our whole lives. Like literally.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been old my whole life, ever since I knew who Stan Lee was. He was in his 70s already. So it's this old guy who's, it's just comforting knowing that he's around. I don't think losing him is going to affect like the quality of the movies or anything. Like he's a producer on all the Marvel films, but it's just like it's a gesture that has nothing to do with these movies. But at least, dude, he got to live to see his movies touch so many people.
Yeah.
He's met so many fans who have told him how much he means to them. I almost got a chance to meet Stan Lee about 4 years ago. I was living in New York. There was a convention in New Jersey. And just to meet him and get a picture with him was $200. I would have paid $500 without hesitating. And I'm not a rich dude, but that's how much the guy meant to me. I paid the $200 right away. I paid an extra $100 for him to sign an extra item. One day before that convention, he canceled his appearance because he had fallen ill. And I knew back then, I was like, I think that was my only chance because I knew I was leaving the States right after that. And it was very sad not to get to meet him. Like, I would have killed to have a picture with Stan Lee.
Right.
And to commemorate, you know, and just, I just wanted to say thank you. That is literally all I wanted to say was you changed my life. Thank you. Something he's probably heard 10 million times, yeah. You know, but I'm happy that he got to hear that over and over again. I'm happy that he knows how much people love him. So it's very rare for someone's art to be appreciated in their time while they're still around.
I mean, just imagine that he was the one that was kind of essentially behind Infinity Wars in the comics. And now he's like, he's seen it. He's seen it on a giant screen with all his creations alive, you know, like flesh and bone.
He's lived to see three different people become Spider-Man. Like,
right?
You think once was enough. You got another one, then you got another one. Like, he's seen a lot. Honestly, like, I'm just very happy for him. I'm happy that the only thing that makes me sad is that some of the artists that he worked with maybe never got that recognition, like Steve Ditko, Jack Kirby, John Romita.
Yeah, yeah.
He overshadowed them, but that was just who Stan was. He was a marketeer. The guy loved the camera, and the camera loved him, so he was a great person to interview. He represented comics, so he became the face of not just Marvel. He became the face of comics. Like,
yeah.
DC never had their Stan Lee. There are a lot of great creatives in DC, but like Bob Kane created Batman. I couldn't name another character that he created that you would know, that most people would know. Marvel had Stan.
Yeah.
DC never had their Stan Lee.
Yeah.
So that's why he's so synonymous with comics, with all that stuff.
Yeah.
What I love, by the way, is all the outpour of love and the comments on Instagram and Twitter and the tributes from all the people that have worked with him. He seems like he was such a nice person, like such a good-hearted guy.
Yeah.
And you can see that.
With a great sense of humor.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't have
a problem with kind of making fun of himself on screen, just taking things a bit lightly. So I loved the day he passed, and I was going on my Instagram feed and I saw all the tributes, and it was really touching and moving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a hilarious dude. And like he really cares about his fans. Like a week after his wife passed away, that was maybe like a year ago, he had to put his prints on like the, I think for like the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah, yeah.
And he showed up a week after his wife died, and Kevin Smith mentions this in his podcast, but like he put on Stan Lee. Like he didn't want to disappoint the fans. He didn't want to stay home. He didn't want to show up upset. He showed up, put on a smile, and he was there for the fans, even though he was mourning the loss of his wife of at least 50, 60 years. And that is who Stan was. He puts the fans first. He changed the way companies interact with their fans, literally with Stan's soapbox, like we were talking about a little bit earlier. The nickname Stan the Man Lee, Jack the King Kirby. He wanted to put a face to the company. He wanted to give it some personality. Mm-hmm. He literally kind of invented the DVD commentary. Like there were comics they would sell, like magazines. They would come with this little disc where it was just the artists and the writers talking and just joking around that fans could listen to, and they could hear the voices of the people who were writing the stories that they were reading. That was so ahead of its time.
Yeah.
That's before the internet. So not only did he influence like pop culture, he changed the way companies interact with their fans. Mm. And I think also that's another thing we owe to Stan.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, now, you know, we have
Avengers 4 coming out next year. We have Captain Marvel coming out next year. You and I have mentioned how like next year is a little, it's drier than usual when it comes to, when it comes to Marvel.
We're
movies.
Only getting four of them.
Four next year?
No, like was, two movies.
But yeah, compared to one movie every 5 years, it's like, we're only getting three Marvel movies. That's nothing.
Yeah. What are some of your expectations for Avengers 4?
I don't know what to expect. I expect my mind to be blown
to
again.
To be blown away, yeah.
Because I think it's going to be a bit hard because they set the standard so highly with Infinity War.
Yeah.
I think they will match it or even outdo themselves.
Yeah.
But what a hard job they have. What a hard task they have. Again, to see what's going to happen, who's going to come back, how do they come back, what's... The whole mechanics of everything.
And I think the rumors has it that it's going to be set a couple of years after Infinity War. That's what I heard. Or there's like time gap between Infinity War and Avengers 4.
Yeah, there's going to be time jump. Look, I heard a lot about Avengers 4. I'm not going to get into any of it here because I don't want to ruin it. Potentially for anyone, expect some time travel, I would say.
Okay.
Expect...
quantum realm
some quantum realm. Expect I do think it'll be better than the last one, which is saying a lot, but I do think they're gonna be, because I think it's also, this movie's gonna close out Captain America's arc that was started in the first Avenger. I think this movie's gonna be very Captain America centric, which is gonna make you happy. I think this is just, I haven't heard this anywhere. This is just a rumor personally. I think it would be a crime if Cap doesn't die at the end of Avengers 4.
I think
he needs to die to serve that story and to close out his arc.
Yeah.
I think he needs to go back to the 40s and be with,
Peggy.
Be with Peggy, be with his girl. He still owes her that dance. And I think that that's how his arc is going to close out. Like he'll probably die in the present day. We'll see him in a parallel universe. He's going to show up and tell Peggy that, hey, I owe you that dance. They're going to dance. And I think we're going to have Cap dead in the present, but still alive somewhere. And maybe 5 years, 6 years down the line, when the Avengers are in trouble, they're going to send someone back in time to bring Cap back. And that'll be his big comeback, I think, like 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now.
Okay.
If I had to plan very far ahead, I think that's what they would want to do.
Well, I mean, that sounds intriguing. Enough.
I like that.
Yeah, I love that.
That would be very cool. Like, imagine
Russo brothers.
I would watch that movie.
Hire him.
Please, yeah, I'm down. But don't check my Twitter, Disney, or else you'll never hire me.
Uh-oh. what I loved most about Infinity War, I think, is what the screenwriters did, and they kind of like flipped the, you know, like they turned the who the protagonist was supposed to be kind of unexpectedly, because Thanos became the protagonist of Infinity War. It was his arc that was being served and not necessarily the heroes. And I think that's what made it such an astoundingly good film. But I think in Avengers 4, it's going to be back to the heroes. It's not necessarily going to be Thanos's arc anymore. So I think it's going to be an interesting thing to kind of watch them, you know, one after the other, because of that, you know, the reverse thing or the vice versa thing happening. I do also have a feeling that Cap won't make it out.
I would love, obviously, I don't want the guy to die.
Well, right.
It would serve the story so well.
Yeah.
You know, and like we're owed a proper, like, comic book character death at the end. Like Logan was great, but like Dark Knight Rises gave us that fake out, which wasn't cool, you know.
But I do agree that I think we do need consequences in the universe, and you know, we obviously know that a lot of those consequences that we got at the end of Infinity War aren't necessarily consequences because they have sequels. So you know, so we already know that those are characters that are going to be coming back. I just feel like we need something to kind of like break us emotionally for real this time. You know what I mean? And I think that would make the Marvel universe, something that maybe can be, not that it's not taken seriously now, but it will be, I mean, legit, you'll be like, oh, okay, so people can die in this universe. I mean, for real die. And I think that's always a good thing to have, so that we're not always dealing with, you know, plot armor. With these characters. So someone have to say, I heard someone breathing in. Did you have anything to say? Oh, okay. Cause I was looking off on the screen, so I wasn't sure if any of you wanted to say something.
Alan, I am your father. No,
you are.
Shocker. Lebanese box office is something that we've gotten you guys used to that we do here on the show. We talk about the box office. But I'm looking at it now, and there really hasn't been much of a change since last week, which is why I figured we could just briefly talk about it this week.
Yeah.
Coming in at number five is the relentless Johnny English striking again. This is now its seventh week out in the.
Are you sure? Is it no? The Hunter Killer.
Is it? Am I looking at the wrong one?
Or am I looking at the wrong one?
I don't know. I have the one from.
No, you're looking at the wrong one.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because the Grinch came out last week.
Oh, there we go. There we go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Sorry about that. Sorry, guys. Okay, so here we go. So The Hunter Killer is number five. This is its third week. It's made did 4,749 entries this week with 22,600 in total so far.
Yep. And at number four, you have a new entry, A Private War with Rosamund Pike. It's at 5,359 entries.
And then we've got The Grinch, with it being its first week, with 6,788 entries.
And at number two, Freddie Mercury remains almost on top of the box office, with 8,139 entries with Bohemian Rhapsody, with a total of 18,000. Let's just round it
up. Yeah, 18,000. And still reigning king, Nadine Labaki's Kafar Naoum, for its eighth week. This week it had 9,436 entries, capping off its total run being 162,972 entries in the eight-week run. Sorry about the mix-up. We'll see what it's like now with Fantastic Beasts making its run. And then you've also got Wreck-It Ralph 2, coming out soon as well. I know the premiere is today, but the it comes out next Thursday, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then you've got, Creed following in the week
next
after
week,
that.
Yeah.
The week
after
that.
So, it's going to be an interesting to see how things will change.
But listening to the numbers, it did seem like a slow weekend in the box office. Just quick fun fact, just for I used to write box office reports for a couple of online publications here. And I kind of stopped because I realized that as a population, we Lebanese people, we have horrible taste in movies.
Oh, yeah.
And I gave up writing about box office when Step Up like 6 or Step Up 5
was number one
for like 5 weeks. I'm like, I'm done. That's it. I don't know why Step Up to the Streets 7 is still number one, but I don't want to talk about this anymore. So we need to do better as a country. I think we can do better.
Yes.
You're absolutely right.
This is Hadanai's constant conversation about the box office. Anyway, on that note, we're gonna start handing off our social media handles and bringing the show to an end. Do we want to recommend, just watch anything Stan Lee, I think, this week is
Anything Marvel related.
That'll be our recommendation. Anything in the MCU or, Spider-Man 2. on that note, so if you want to follow me on social media, you can do so at Alan Mahana and
Had.Solo.
If you want to follow the great Anthony Sargon, you can do so at
Geek Sargon. And some recommendations. Stan Lee's Mutants, Monsters, and Marvels. It's an in-depth interview with Kevin Smith that was done like 16 years ago. I highly recommend that one. Mm-hmm. And watch Kevin Smith's two-hour podcast. I think it's Fat Man Beyond, the Stan Lee tribute. Kevin Smith has known Stan Lee for over 20 years, so he has a lot of
great... Kevin Smith is an awesome man.
He's an awesome dude, and we almost lost Kevin Smith this year, by the way, with a heart attack.
Yeah, we did.
And this year has been horrible for the geek community. We lost Steve Ditko, who co-created Spider-Man and a lot of other characters. We lost Stan Lee, and we lost John Schnepp.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So to think that we almost lost Kevin Smith would have been insane. Definitely watch that. He has a lot of great stories with Stan Lee, and if you're interested, I think it'll be very worth your while.
Thank you. That's awesome, Anthony. You can also listen to our show on all podcast platforms. We are spreading across those platforms the more we grow our podcast. You can watch our show on YouTube and Facebook. You can check out our website at www.scripttoscreenpod.com. I'm just rabbling them off really quick. I want to thank all of our new listeners. We've got a lot of those. I've been checking our analytics. Sweden, India, Ireland, Egypt, Cyprus, France. We love all of you new people.
Yes, awesome.
Joining us, listening to us now as well. So thank you guys for joining us today. Our condolences to all of Stan Lee's friends and family and fans and lovers and all that. We will see you guys again next week. stay cool, go to better movies. Anything else you guys want to say?
Yeah, go to better movies.
Go to better movies.
Excelsior?
Oh, yeah.
Excelsior,
yeah. Excelsior, indeed.